And happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Hanukkah, of course, begins at sundown on Saturday. And I just hope you have a delightful holiday with your family. We're going to have live programming for you, of course, throughout the weekend and also on the New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. As a matter of fact, on New Year's Day, that program at night will be my 14-year anniversary party. So you're all invited on that one, too. Just bring your champagne glasses, and we'll all be toasting the night away. But with Miracle Open Lines, also let's keep it holiday-related. If you want to call in about some things, questions and things like that, we'll do that, too. I had, during midweek open lines this week, somebody had sent us a text. We give text questions, of course, and Tom was relaying it to me from L.A., and she wanted to know what my most memorable Christmas was, and I wanted to save that for tonight. I've talked about this before in some previous Christmas-type shows, and I'm going to mention it again because it's just something I never forgot. I had two sisters. One has passed on, but my oldest sister, Gail, younger than me, we must have been about, I must have been 12, and she was a couple years younger than me, so she was about 10. We wanted bicycles for Christmas. That's what we wanted. And as kids, you always wake up way before your parents do on Christmas morning, and you head for the tree. And we woke up probably about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I don't know if she woke me up or if I woke her up, but we got out of bed and we headed down the hallway. And Dad bought a modest house back in 1958 and paid $18,000 for it. I remember that. Had a mortgage. And they still have that house. My dad has passed, but Mom's still alive. But it took care of us. And it gave us the shelter we needed, for sure. Three bedrooms and everything else. So we're running down this small hallway, and we get to the living room, and we're looking at the tree, and we're looking for the bicycles. And we don't see them. And we look at each other, and in this look of grief, we figured, oh, my God, Christmas is not going to be the same. We didn't get what we wanted. And we were so distraught. Now, keep in mind, we're little kids, right? Just then, at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning, it's still dark out in Detroit and cold. And it was snowy that Christmas. We looked out the front window. I don't know what compelled us to do that. And we saw Mom and Dad pushing bicycles across the street. They had them stored in our neighbor's garage so we wouldn't see them. And so it's snowy out, and it's cold out, and it's dark out. And there they are pushing these bicycles across the street to bring them into our house to put them under the tree. And we looked at each other, tears in our eyes, basically, of glee. And then we said, we better not be here when they get in. So she ran to her room. I ran to mine. And we tried to get to sleep. And, of course, that was nearly impossible. And pretended, of course, that we never knew that we were going to have those bicycles for Christmas. But I'll never forget that. Never. We're going to be back in just a moment. We'll get to your miracle calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We are back with our holiday program, Miracle Open Lines, and open lines for you as well. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Mark on the wild card line. He's in Florida. Welcome to the show, Mark. Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you. And I know that you would appreciate what I'm about to tell you because this deals with horses.
Okay, love horses.
Definitely. I was transporting horses back from California. And prior to this, one of my client's horses had died tragically after she was bred to my stallion. And she was in foal, and she died tragically. So she had me go pick up another horse for her. And on the way back, I was in Winslow, Arizona, and she was starting to get colicky. And I was just panicked.
Oh, no.
Saturday night. And I called vets. No vets were around. They're all at local rodeos. They weren't home. And I was just panicking. And I was telling that horse, you cannot die. You cannot die, because this client was so distraught because the first one was her dream horse.
And then you didn't want this to happen under your care. Oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I was doing everything in my power to take care of this mare. I was doing everything. I was in with her. I was massaging her. I was putting a blanket on her because it was cold. And so finally, the vet, about 4 hours later, after everything was said and done, four hours later, the vet had called me. And I had been in the trailer with this horse, and the back door was open. Of course, there's a butt bar there. And when he called, he said, you need to get to back, go back to Flagstaff. So I'm thinking, oh, gads, I've got to go way back to Flagstaff, 60 miles back. So as I was getting ready to go, I was ready to go on the freeway, and I thought, oh, gosh, I need some fuel. So I went over to the gas station. I got some fuel, and then the receipt didn't spit out, so I had to go inside to get the receipt into the office there.
Yeah.
And on the left, I saw this drunk who was walking across the street, and I thought, oh, gads, he's probably going to be panhandling, and I can't deal with this right now. I've got to get going. And he just kept on walking towards me, and as I was going into the store, he said, he was waving at me, and I said, no, I can't do anything. I can't do anything right now. And then he said, but your trailer door is open.
Oh.
And I was about ready to get on that freeway, and everything prevented me up to that point. I went and closed the door, turned around to thank him, and he was gone.
He was gone. Oh.
And then after that, after this horse got better, after the vet, I picked him up. I went back to the fuel stop to get some more fuel. I wouldn't have done that, but I went and got some fuel, and I thought, I better go give this horse an apple. I went back in the back, and I opened up the door, the feed door, and I looked in, and this horse's foot was up into the manger. And I thought, you know, if I wouldn't have stopped. So two miracles happened that time. And prior to that, I was praying fervently. And I know that was an angel, and that God was just working to help me out.
I love that story, Mark. Great. Enjoy the holidays, my friend.
Oh, likewise, my friend. Take care. Bye.
What a great story. Susan's in Kansas City, Missouri, first-time caller. Hi, Susan. What do you have for us?
Oh, I enjoyed your story so much. I had it visualized. I think it was fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was, you picture two little kids with their eyes open because the bikes aren't there. And then we see our parents bringing them across the street. Oh, my gosh. I'll just never forget it.
Well, no, what I called for, my daughter made a comment a couple days ago. She says, Mom, I didn't think you would be here this Christmas. In March
God.
This year, my electrolytes went crazy, and I was in the hospital, had two seizures within 3 hours.
Oh, Susan.
And my magnesium dropped to 0.2. And I've had doctors and nurses tell me that you don't live when it gets to that. They brought in a crash cart. And I was in the hospital 4 days. And the only time I can remember is about 5 seconds right before they shot magnesium into my IV. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew I was in trouble. And underneath my breath, I kept saying, help me, Lord, help me, Lord. That instant, that doctor shot that magnesium into my IV. That second big seizure I was having stopped, and I went to sleep. And I know it was an angel.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Absolutely.
At that time. And because it was confirmed to me about 3 weeks later, I was home, and I played the piano. I have since I was 4 years old. And I was sitting at the piano, and I was playing How Great Thou Art. That's my favorite song. Got to the end of the song, and my daughter, she has degrees in music. And I was playing through this song, and the very last part of it, something told me to play that part over, and I did. And when I did, George, I have never felt so much peace and joy in my life, and I don't remember playing that part over. My daughter said I sound like a concert pianist, and all of a sudden, I thought back to that 5 seconds, and I know there was an angel or God sitting right on that piano bench. Says, well,
somebody was there for you.
And he said, and I could hear him say, I was there.
And how are you feeling now, Susan? Everything good?
I'm doing great. I still have a little trouble with kind of vertigo. They said sometimes when you have, when your electrolytes go off like that, that it can affect your long-term memory. And to this day, I can only remember that 5 seconds.
Wow. All right. Well, you continue taking care of yourself.
Well, thank you, but I just wanted to let you know.
Thanks.
And
thanks for that story.
I loved your story.
Okay.
And Merry Christmas to you and
you
your family.
Too. You too, Susan. What a great story. Let's go to now, whose turn is it? Let's go to Steve in Gainesville, Florida. Welcome to the show. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Stephen.
Happy holidays. My wife, 21 years, who passed from after 3 brain cancer surgeries. You get ambushed by grief. I bought these salt lamps, and you know how we eat over the sink as guys. After 2.5 years, I look over at the lamp in the distance in the family room, and, you know, it takes on the face of my wife, and taking different pictures and angles of it. And, you know, the children, the stepchildren who we had raised for 21 years, the grief part of it, the oddity of it, they kidnapped her out of the hospital after a third surgery, and I never saw her again, divorced 31 days later in another county, and been in court 2.5 years. But, the, you know, when I looked over to the lamp one day, it just shocked me. You know, I'm a medical photographer, and you know, it just was extremely surprising. And it, my journey, of course, is, you know, you go to showstarsupport.wordpress.com, story about it. But it shocked me. And I've got other things also. I've documented over 2.5 years. Knocks on the ceilings and the bed and other things, but what your guest spoke about love and things like that and grounding, I brought in a holistic healer for her and a cook, and yeah, you know, I'm a recipient of this blessing, and even though there's a grief and tragedy, I'm fighting this so that other people don't have to suffer through this also. With you know, there was no medical testimony, I wasn't there. 31 days later, I'm divorced. And so whatever pain or suffering, we are blessed at times to learn from it.
We sure are. Stay strong, Steve.
I will.
Thank you. Have a great holiday for you. Let's go west of the Rockies, Viola in Glendale, Arizona. Let's get you in before the break. Hi, Viola.
Hi, George. You are truly a gift to all of us. And Crystal is a lovely lady.
Oh, she sure is.
It's a miracle I still have my 57-year-old son with me. When he was about going on 13, about, I had this reoccurring dream that this boy was going down in quicksand.
Oh, my God.
And I kept telling him, he was an explorer. We live, where I lived, there was desert and sand and gravel way far out, and he'd go exploring and not tell me where he was going. He'd pretend he was going to parks and recreation. He and his buddies had sneaked off to the sand and gravel pit. Well, you know, I kept warning him about this horrible dream.
Oh, my God.
And he, so I was sitting in the kitchen one day, the kitchen family room area, and I had a divider that divided that area from the front door. It wasn't all the way to the ceiling. All of a sudden, this one day, the front door burst open, and my son comes running in. Mom, you can quit having that dream now. It happened. And above the divider, I could see this real dark, kinky, curly hair. And they came down that divider and into that room. It was a tall, nice-looking African-American man. He said, "Ma'am, I work at the sand and gravel pit. I stayed after work to do some paperwork. And I heard boys screaming and yelling." He said, "I ran as fast as I could to where I heard the yelling coming from." He said, "Your son, I don't know if it was quicksand or what they called jelly mud, he was into it up to his neck. His boys couldn't get him out. This man, I don't know how
he was, he the angel,
get him out of there and drove him home. Now, it was probably about 6 miles from our home, and drove him home. And I had no money at the time at the house, and I said to the man, I said, if you'll give me your name and your telephone number when my husband gets home, I would think we would like to reward you somehow. He said, it's not necessary. And he turned around and walked down around that divider in that little hallway and out the front door. I ran to the front window that faced the street so that maybe I could get his license plate and check up.
We're going to hit the break, but I bet he was gone, wasn't he?
He was gone.
We'll be back with more. And welcome back to Coast Open Lines. I'm really enjoying this tonight. Thanks for joining us on your Friday night. I really look forward to it. Hey, so one of the things I do in St. Louis, I've got a couple cool little places that I go to on a regular basis, and it's almost like a Cheers place for me. I get really comfortable, and I really like the workers, couple little restaurants. One is called the Cafe Napoli in Clayton. And one of the things I do is during the holiday season, I will pop in there and I'll give the employees cash tips. Not a lot of money, but cash tips. And it's just something for me to say thank you, Merry Christmas. And they really appreciate it and it's fun. So a couple days ago, I go to my local bank and I said, look, I need to make a cash withdrawal. And I told them how much I needed. And again, not a lot. And they said, Mr. Norrie, you're going to have to call ahead. And I said, what do you mean, call ahead? They said, well, we don't have enough cash to give you. And folks, when I tell you this was not a lot of money, trust me, it was not a lot of money at all. And I'm in a bank. And they said, we don't have enough money to give you. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And she said, I am dead serious. People have been coming in every hour getting cash out of the bank. And we don't have any more, and we need to order ahead. So if you want it, here, go talk to your private banker over there, and she'll order it for you, and it'll be here in a couple days, and you can come pick it up. And I was just astounded. And I went to the bank today and picked it up, and I'm going to be walking around tomorrow doing my little thing. But I got to tell you, the bank did not have enough cash. And they told me this was happening at every bank, not just theirs. Something's going on. Something really is. Anyways, let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to Laura in Cincinnati, Ohio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
I'm thinking that this kind of categorizes as a miracle story, at least for me it is.
All right. Speak a little louder, too, if you can.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me better now?
Yep, sure can.
Good. My father died 8 years ago today, and he had dementia, and everybody was in his room that night, but he was totally coherent. That night, he remembered everybody that was in that room.
He just popped out of it, didn't he?
Yeah. And he was holding my mom's hand. She was in shock just for that.
Yeah.
And he touched her nose and said, you're mine.
Ah, that's
cute. And he kept saying it was real bright in the room, but, you know, they turned the lights out. And the only thing that was on was the TV. And he kept saying it was too light. And he had no clue that he was, you know,
going
to pass.
That he was going,
Yeah.
Did you all know that, though?
I didn't, but the rest of the family did.
They did.
Knew how I'd react.
Yeah, you'd go bonkers.
I talked to him at, 3 in the morning on the phone, and he knew who I was. They said that he kept calling for me. So my sister called me and put him on the phone. I was one of the caregivers. And he remembered everyone. And there was, 8 of us, 8 kids.
Isn't that something, how that happens?
Yes. It is very strange. But it was very cool, though, because it was just so peaceful and happy. No pain.
That makes you feel a little easier about what happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my mom felt a lot better, confused, but better.
You know, Laura, if that's the way you're going to go, that's the way you're going to go. Thank you for that story, and Merry Christmas to you. Next up, let's go to Temple, Texas. Don's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hello, George.
Hi there.
George, I was recently diagnosed with stage 3 cancer within the last year.
Cancer of what, if you want to share that with us?
I'd prefer not to at this point.
That's fine.
I was very, very, very ill, and I required 24-hour-a-day care. I was going through the chemo and the radiation, and that will make you sick.
It sure will.
Well, I asked my caretaker that I wanted to go outside and sit on the porch. I said, I'm going to sit out here, and I want to pray. And I'm not a very religious person, or hadn't been a very religious person. And he said, well, I'll sit here and pray with you. And because I didn't know if I was going to wake up the next morning. I was so sick. Well, I was sitting there, and I was really getting on to the Lord, telling him, you know, why did you do this to me? What's going on? I said, you know, I've always tried to believe in you. You know, you've never showed me anything, a sign or anything that you exist. I said, you know, please, you know, show me some sort of sign that I'm going to live. I'm cutting this real short.
Okay.
About 1 second later, a parakeet flies, just appears out of nowhere.
A parakeet?
A parakeet. This parakeet's color of the rainbow. Flies down and lands on my arm. And my carekeeper is just sitting there in astonishment. And this parakeet just is chirping and chirping and just like it's cussing me out. I can't understand parakeet language. That's what I was like. And I had this feeling of euphoria just all over my body, the most peaceful feeling you could ever imagine. And I picked this parakeet up. It's sitting on my finger. And I have not been able to walk very, you know, by myself without help.
Right.
I was able to stand up.
Wow.
And walk into my den. And the parakeet, I set it down on the counter. And it's still just sitting there chirping. And I've got the parakeet to this day. It's living proof that God exists, because I just don't think that it was a coincidence.
Well, no, not at all. And he's staying with you then. You're taking care of him, too.
I'm taking care of Jesus.
I love it. And how are you doing in your battle?
I was told that it's almost 100% gone. Well, they think it's 100% gone.
Wow, that's great.
By the CT scans. From that day that I got Jesus, I started improving every day. And in the last 3 months, the doctors are amazed. They said from stage 3 malignant cancer, the worst case the doctor said he had ever seen, he said it's disappeared. It's
good
gone.
For you.
Tumors have
you
gone.
Keep it up, Don. You keep it up.
All right. God
All right,
bless
my
y'all.
Friend.
Y'all have a Merry Christmas.
You too. You're going to have a great Christmas. What a great story. Miranda's with us now in Santa Clarita, California. Hello, Miranda. Welcome to the show.
George, it's
sure.
So nice to talk to you, and
you
I
too.
Loved your story. It was awesome.
That was fun, and the story we just heard was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really incredible.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, I have a story similar, but I'm going to tell one that I think is more appropriate.
Okay.
And it's regarding Christmas. I think you know my backstory a little bit. I was adopted, and my real parents, I've already told you, they're Cesar Romero and Carmen Miranda.
Yes.
But my...
And I love them both.
Thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you for saying that. I so appreciate it. And, well, what happened, there's an interesting backstory. I was adopted on Christmas Day, and I was always told that I was born on Christmas Day, and after the long investigation with detectives, the truth was really hard to take, but I found out when my stepmother was dying on her deathbed, she said to me, listen, sweetie, she said, I'm not your real mother. You need to go to Las Vegas, to the Rio, tell them who you are, and your mother hasn't finished her life. You need to finish it for her, and I've finished my life. But it was a shock to me, George, because
yeah.
It was Christmas, and I was like, what? I'm not your kid? What? So long story short, she passed away, And the next year was, you know, Christmas, and she'd really gotten into, she loved me doing radio and TV talk shows, so I was an anchor woman at the time, and so I had a show I was doing, Miranda Unlimited, in Burbank, and I didn't want to do a show on Christmas because I couldn't stand Christmas music. So I took a tape of, it was a DVD, CD of the Jefferson Starship, and I told the people at the station, please, no Christmas music, I can't handle it. So they said, okay. So I handed them the music. I said, if you play Christmas music, I'm going to have a meltdown.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
They,
yeah.
I said, put on the, you know, Jefferson Starship, because I want to hear that music. And all of a sudden, George, this angelic music starts playing like from another dimension. And all of a sudden, George, I heard my mother's voice singing to me the first Noel. She used to always sing it to me on my birthday. On
wow.
Christmas. And then I heard all my relatives in Portuguese, even my real mother, Carmen Miranda, speaking Portuguese to me. It was like they were all at a party. And all of a sudden, and the whole station was like, we were like in, getting chills. And I said, oh, my God, how could this happen? I wanted to make sure there was no Christmas music. And everyone there said, this was a miracle, Miranda. And I was blown away by that, and I never forgot it. And ever since then, George, I've been able to handle Christmas music.
How about that? I was just going to ask you, is it okay to keep playing them on the program tonight?
Yes, now I love Christmas music, and I'm okay with it. But I still have the air check, and they checked out the CD. I said, did somebody mess with this? And I had an engineer go, no one has messed with it, but now it plays this mysterious angel music. And it's still on there, and we don't know how that happened. So I just kind of figured that, you know, God and his mysteries, but it cured me of my anxiety about Christmas.
That's great. You know? Great story. Miranda, thanks. Have a great Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas to you and much love.
Absolutely. And, of course, Christmas is one of the great times of the year. It really is. All kinds of things happen. I had a story once. Back in St. Louis, where I am right now, but when I was on my local Nighthawk show, somebody called me, and he said, George, I've got to tell you this story. And I was close, he said, to killing myself. As a matter of fact, I was looking for the spot, the peaceful spot, to do it. I had a gun, and I was going to shoot myself. And I went driving about an hour outside of town, and I found the spot I was going to do it. I saw a little lake and ducks flying in and out and a little park bench. There was nobody there. That's where I was going to shoot myself. I was so despondent. Nothing was working in my life. And so he went there, sat on the stool, and he was contemplating pulling the gun out. And he said, George, out of nowhere, this old farmer comes by, coveralls and everything, sits down next to me. I'm ready to kill myself. And he's talking to me, and he won't stop talking. And he's talking to me about his life and how I'm doing and everything else. But he said, I got to tell you, after he was done talking, I felt great. I felt great. Thank God I didn't pull the gun out. And I thanked him, and I decided I'm going to go get a new job. I'm going to get a new relationship. I'm going to change my life, and I did. And it's changed my life for the rest of my life. So I decided a year later to go back and thank that individual. And I didn't know where he was. So I went to the barber. I figured they'll know where he is. And the guy said, well, go to the top of the hill. Talk to his daughter. So I did. I kind of thought something was wrong. And she came to the door. And I said, excuse me, but I want to thank your father because a year ago he, and she said, no, let me stop you. You're the fifth person to come up to the house to thank my dad. He died 15 years ago. That was chilling. We're going to have more open lines for you next hour, so those of you on hold, just stay right where you are. Our dear friend Lionel Fanthorpe, who is not feeling too well in England these days, so say a prayer for him. But thank God he did this for us many years ago.
'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap, when, out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now, Dasher, now, Dancer, now, Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away, all! As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Greatest rendition, of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. We're going to come back next hour, a final hour to go of our holiday open lines here, Miracle Stories. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.